It's episode 88 of Dive in the Podcast with special guest Demise Farrugia. Dive in the Podcast is a weekly all about diving podcast for everyone. Whether you explore the oceans as a snorkeler, scuba diver, free diver, or tech diver, Dive In has something for you. The show's filled with diving news, feature interviews with guests from around the world, interesting dive topics, and ocean advocacy. Visit diveinpod.com and find Visit diveinpod.com to find out more about the show, past guests, and our Patreon.
Hi everyone, I'm Nick.
I'm Amit, and this week on DecoStop, we're going to chat a little bit about technical diving inside mount.
I'm Justin, and we are the hosts of Dive in the Podcast. Before we start today's episode, I'd like to thank our listeners. Thanks for tuning in every week. Your support encourages us to keep going and make it bigger and better podcast. Nick, Amit, you guys, and April, who's not on the episode tonight, you guys spoke with Alex Davis last week. How'd that interview go?
I mean, I think it was an awesome episode. It's nice to hear about freediving in Barbados. I know there's a little bit of a scene there, obviously, as Alex has mentioned. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by somebody that can dive to nearly 100 meters with a mask on. I think a lot of other people are too. No, but it was an awesome episode to kind of hear his freediving journey and his journey with the sport and what he takes away from it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think for me, one of the cool things was, and Nick kind of drew a parallel to it, was despite the fact that he's on a different part of the world, some of his challenges that he went through in terms of forming up the freediving community in Barbados, Nick and the crew here in Halifax have had similar experiences along the way. So, you know, I mean, it kind of, I guess, shows that regardless of where you are, certain battles you're fighting, whether it be for stigma related issues or just like lack of understanding from others as to why the sport's a meaningful one, was cool to hear about. And I also, believe it or not, I quite enjoyed hearing about his pool training, which I had no idea that you could get so many gains from, you know, just swimming in the pool, which was, for, I guess, a non-free diver, that was kind of shocking to hear for me. So, yeah, I thought it was a great interview. Nice guy as well.
It's kind of a huge thing because a lot of new freedivers go like, oh, what do I need to do to go deep? And then you'll have somebody that's done a bunch of training will go, well, actually, you need to, you know, go put in a bunch of laps on apnea in a pool. And people go like, oh, that's not going to help me. And it's like pretty much most people will tell you that's a huge component. Not everyone, but a lot of freedivers will tell you the huge component. So, yeah.
Basically, I'm just feeling guilty for not showing up to the Halifax Freediving Club pool nights on Sundays still.
Way to go, Justin.
I am the worst. My freediving gains are pretty terrible this year, so it's okay. That's all right, though. Someone who doesn't pass up on Sunday night training is tonight's guest, Demise Farrugia. Demise is the owner and founder of Diverse Scuba Solutions, a dive training operation based in Santa Lucia, Malta, focused on one-on-one personalized results-based training for recreational to technical diving. Welcome to the podcast, Demise. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
We're happy to have you. How are you doing today?
All good here. All good. How about you guys? How's everyone?
Beautiful.
We're all well. We're missing one tonight. Our normal co-host, April, is off working on a movie. So, she's obviously doing a lot better than the rest of us.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Not as good as Demise, though. I can see in the back now. I mean, obviously our listeners can't, but I see there's a big Canada flag behind your head there, Demise. Well played, sir.
I was mentioning to the guys here. So my dad, when he was much younger, he spent a couple of years working in Canada. And Canada's always close to heart from his side. So yeah, that's the reason why you see a flag on our living room here.
Oh, very cool. Glad that's to awesome. See it.
We'll officially start your interview in a moment, Demise. But before that, I'm sure you know that the ocean plays a big part in the world's climate, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and there's an article on the BBC titled "The Ocean's Climate Buffer Role Under Threat." So the world's ocean stores about one-third of the carbon dioxide from our atmosphere, and researchers from the International Eye Atlantic Project have been doing research to see what happens when those carbon stores, how they're affected when ocean temperatures rise. That carbon usually gets buried in the deep ocean's muddy bottom, and they tested in conditions in a controlled setting and raised the temperature. and it doesn't look good for carbon storage during higher ocean temperatures. There's a great BBC article with a lot of detail. I don't want to try to muddle up detail in my retelling of the story, but go take a read and check it out. Everybody should. Yeah, more sad news about the ocean's future if we keep letting things go run unchecked, eh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the emissions and the current carbon dioxide situation in the world has definitely left its, and it's taking its toll, I guess. Case in point here in Malta, in fact, I was speaking to Amit the other day. The heat waves we experienced back in August were astronomical. I mean, literally one heat wave after the other. It was funny, I concluded my thermics course in 40 degrees Celsius. Whilst wearing the tracksuit. It was a very interesting time for me.
Wow. That's a warm class.
Yeah, it is. And you guys are all with your heated gloves, heated vests, heated this. Yeah, different area of, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think if this keeps up, I think we might be ditching our dry suits in a couple of years.
Ooh, okay. I'll see you guys.
We're moving to Malta. Okay. Well, that is it for the news today. It's time to dive in with Demis Barugia. Demis, you're Maltese. For people unfamiliar with Malta, tell us a bit about what it's like over there.
I'm native Maltese. I live on the main island of Malta. And basically, Malta is bank smack in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. It's a very small archipelago. Jokingly, I sometimes call the archipelago the half of a full stop. It's literally, you can barely see it on the map. And basically, a collection of four islands. So Malta being the largest of the lot. Then followed by Gozo, and I'm sure Gozo must have definitely come up on the names of, you know, on Instagram, Twitter, and even on Facebook. Mainly renowned for its picturesque diving sites, and that's where there was also the ex-Azur window prior of it collapsing a couple of years ago. And then we have Comino, which is our third island. And lastly, we have Filfla. It's the smallest island. Quick note for everybody. Filfla back, and I'm sure you guys, we're going to speak about our World War II history that we have. So Filfla, during the occupation of the British Empire, when we were a colony under the British, it was used as a target practice by the British Navy. And yeah, it was quite a bigger island back in its time. And yeah, it was shot to smithereens until, you know, we told them to pack up and leave, to put it politely.
Classic Britain, shooting up the place.
Yes, exactly. For our listeners, basically the climate here in Malta is pretty, I wouldn't call it tropical, but it's you know, island life, so to speak. We get all shapes and forms of seasons, so we currently we're slowly going into our winter. So sea temperatures will plummet. I mean, by our standard, very cold, but it can easily go down to 12, 14 degrees in winter. And in summer, I mean, it goes like crazy. Like this summer, we recorded our first 31 degrees of sea temperatures at the surface. I mean, literally everything was dying around us. So yeah, I mean, we get the full spectrum. We go from 3 millimeter wetsuit in summer to all the way down to dry suit with thick undergarments in winter. And yeah, that the whole lot, as we call it.
Growing up in such a place, you had to have a pretty early connection with the water. What's your first memory? Is there a key memory that stands out?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, as I mentioned, since we are an archipelago, we're surrounded by the water, mainly seawater, obviously. We don't get freshwater lakes or anything here on the archipelago. And yeah, I mean, Maltese indoctrination, if you want to call it that way, is a very, very young age. I mean, sometimes even in months, not even years. I mean, native Maltese make their family, particularly the kids, accustomed to the water. And I still remember it like it was yesterday. My late grandfather, who I hold very dearly to heart, you know, I mean, at the tender age of like 6 months or even less, you know, he took me to the sea, etc., to go fishing. You know, he said, you know, it's summer, let's go down, you know, we call it chuffa in Maltese, like, you know, let's play a bit with the water. And I still remember, like, he literally threw me into the water. And then my mom went like crazy. Oh, no, he's going to drown. Oh, no, what are you doing? And I guess that was baptism by fire, if you want to call it that way, or baptism by water in that case. Yeah, that's where the love of the sea, I guess, was was, you know, instilled in me. And from then onwards, you know, I never looked back. And nowadays, guess what? I'm scuba diving as well. So, and even teaching. So yeah, that's the connection I have to the sea. You know, and the rich diversity that we have here on the archipelago. Mainly we get all sorts of dive sites. We have reefs, we have drop-offs, shallow places with sandy bottoms, like the crystal clear white sandy bottom. We're mainly renowned for wrecks here in Malta, all shapes and forms, battleships, patrol boats, tugboats, dredgers, bombers, fighters, battleships, dreadnoughts, submarines as well. And yeah, then we have cavern style of overhead, so to speak. We mainly call them sea caves. We only have one complex cave system, if you call it even a cave. It's called Billinghurst in Gozo. So yeah, long story short, we got a mix and match of many different types of dive sites here in Malta, which I know we're going to discuss shortly.
So I imagine there's probably a lot of different ways to enjoy the ocean in Malta. What led you to scuba diving?
What led me actually to me start my journey in scuba diving was predominantly the rich diversity that we have in terms that the island, the archipelago has so much to offer. We have sea caverns, we have reefs, drop-offs, mainly renowned for wrecks. We have all shapes and forms of wrecks, World War One, World War Two, artificial reefs made up of patrol boats, dredgers, tugboats, battleships, dreadnoughts, submarines, airplanes, fighter planes, bombers, so on and so forth. From a very young age, I had a very big interest in history. Case in point, Malta, for such a small archipelago, we're literally one big museum. We have history during the Punic times, during the Roman times. In World War One, we were a hospital base during the conflict that was going up in Northern Europe. And World War II, statistically speaking, we were the most bombed place per square mile on the face of the planet. Not even the Battle of Britain or Berlin in 1943, 44, and 45, when they were being attacked from both fronts, doesn't even come close to how many bombs were dropped on Malta. And yeah, from such a catastrophe, nowadays I'm one of the very few lucky ones that we can go down. And we can explore the rich diversity that we have underwater. So yes, that's my connection to the sea. And yeah, my verses, I started 9 years ago, I never looked back.
So like you described, the dive scene is quite well developed, and we've had people like Audrey Cadell and Gary Dallas here, who we know have been to Malta to teach and dive. Why is it because of the wrecks that people come to Malta, or is there other things to see as well?
Speaking from a diving aspect, the geographic landscape, when I say land, seascape, that's the actual word. It has a lot to offer. Predominantly, apart from the deep stuff that we have, Malta, many of our sites start extremely shallow, where you literally can wade into the water with feet planted on the seabed. Obviously, we're very careful that we have designated training areas so that we don't damage any coral or other biodiversity underwater. But yeah, I mean, even the conditions whereby, again, I'm blessed to the fact that, yeah, I mean, you can easily teach an open water course in a 3 millimeter wetsuit. And sometimes you don't even need a wetsuit. It's so warm in summer. And as the seasons progress, you can also jump into your dry suit, whether you're teaching side mount, windset, CCR. We have a lot of foreign instructors that actually come to Malta to teach almost all courses. I know also some instructors that are doing overhead training all the way up to intro to cave prior to full cave and maybe going somewhere abroad, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, what attracts the divers and the diving community to Malta, aside from the history and how easy it is to dive here, it's also our facilities that we have. You know, the local authorities here on Malta do quite a good job in promoting the island and ensuring to the best of their resources that the dive sites are kept well kept in check. And particularly the recent efforts by Heritage Malta with their Underwater Culture Heritage Unit, who have been really taking care of and making available to the public these fantastic dive sites, the deep ones that we have. And some projects have been undergoing in regards to photogrammetry. that has been undertaken to make these wrecks come to life on the internet, so that even those people that can't dive can still enjoy the wrecks to a certain extent, so to speak.
Wow. That's really a kind of holistic wraparound piece, eh?
Yes.
That is really cool. Going back to yourself, you aren't just content to scuba dive. You opted to progress your training, and now you're a technical instructor. Tell us about that progression and what inspired you to keep going once you started diving.
So from a young age, I was never, just speaking from my side here, I was never into, you know, soccer. In Europe, we call it football. I was never into football and all this, you know, typical sports. I was always a bit of a daredevil. So at a very young age, I started, with some parkour with my mates here in Malta. Following that, I then jumped onto skateboarding, and from skateboarding, then I went on to the next thing and the next thing. And it was like a journey, trying to find myself. And then back in 2012, I joined the fire service as a volunteer firefighter. And that's where it actually started to slowly sink in, not only the adventure side, but slowly, you know, this interest in doing something good for the community, so to speak. And ever since I started with the service back then, slowly I progressed, and then I actually became a firefighting instructor for 2.5 years, and I trained 2 cohorts. And that's where I actually found my niche. That's where my passion for teaching emerged. And from then I went for broke, as we say in English, and I said, you know what, I like diving. I also like teaching. I said, yeah, let's make this actually happen. And I undertook my IDC training in 2018. And ever since, I never looked back. So now it's my fourth year running. So 18, 19, 20, 20, yep, fourth year running. And yeah, from then onwards, Diver Scuba Solutions was born. So yeah, I am the guy behind Diver Scuba Solutions. So the posts you see on Instagram, on Facebook, and some YouTube videos that I've been doing over the past few months, I'm the guy behind them, so to speak.
Very cool. Very cool. And we're going to chat a little bit about that. But I can't pass up this opportunity as we, talk about tech diving, to talk about another area of diving that you're quite enthusiastic about, which is, of course, side mount diving. And so you're a side mount diver and an instructor. I wanted to know, what is it about side mount that really gets you so excited about that style of diving?
Well, my love for side mounts goes back even way before I became an instructor, to be fair. So I was diving, and to be fair, before I actually embarked on my journey in side mount, I was on a dive with my twin set back then. And to be fair, I was quite intrigued seeing divers literally walking to the water's edge with just their wetsuit and their harness back then, with their tanks all dumped at the entrance of the dive site. And I'm like, yeah, that looks quite different, you know? And initially I'm like, I don't know, does it work, etc., so to speak. And yeah, anyway, fast forward to a couple of months, then I saw actual divers, side mount divers in the water. And I was mesmerized, like, how do you fit tanks on the side? You know, this thing actually works. And yeah, I mean, started following some, some, I would call them pioneers in side mount. Case in point, I started looking on YouTube, and that's where the name of Steve Bogarts came up, Thomas Michura, Mikor, that as we know him on social media, and also Vas Proud, who nowadays is a very good friend of mine, a diver by design. And, I started researching a bit, so on and so forth. And then I said, let's give this a try. There's something appealing about it, not only from the comfort or cool factor, but also the flexibility of it. And yeah, 2017, I undertook my side mount training. And yeah, ever since, again, I never looked back. So I've been diving in side mount for more than 5 years now. And I absolutely enjoy the benefits it offers. I mean, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made to undertake a course and start my journey into side mount. Yes. And even nowadays, for technical diving, I mainly dive in side mount. Yes.
I'm gonna make sure Amit doesn't get a word in here, otherwise we'll never get off the topic. But you've had an opportunity to work with some of the biggest name in technical diving, as I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences working with some of these people?
Yes, as we earlier mentioned, basically since Malta, aside from the wrecks that we have, it's a go-to country where it comes to training, whether it's CCR, open circuit, side mount, back mount. It is one of the go-to places, particularly in Europe, given the, you know, the ease and comfort that you have when it comes to choosing dive sites. Yes, so on the archipelago, since it's quite attractive when it comes to diving, we do get quite a lot of big names coming here when it comes to instructors, deep technical divers, videographers, photographers, and some big names that definitely come into my mind are, for example, Gian Michele Iaria, who is a technical instructor and videographer based in Messina. He comes often to the archipelago, working closely with the Heritage Malta team to showcase and make available these fantastic deep wrecks that we have to the general public. Sending my regards here to Johnny. And also Gary Dallas, I know, comes often to the archipelago. Steve Martin comes as well very often to the archipelago for some side mount and technical stuff that he has. And I'm also lucky to know, and nowadays a very good friend of mine, Vas Prout. So I'm sure some of the Sidemount viewer audience that we have follow both Steve and Vas. And yeah, Vas and I, you know, we do work quite closely together in regards to technical training for our students and also some dives we've been doing together. A few weeks ago, we did a couple of technical dives on a submarine, on an American bomber, and also on a Nazi bomber that we have. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that shortly.
We will talk about that shortly. But thinking of those experiences, is there any particular experience that stands out for you that you could share with us?
One of the happy moments I have, and also I'd like to share an experience with you guys, is as you progress the technical ladder, as I call it, or the experience ladder, to be fair, many people think that to have a good dive, you really need to go deep, go crazy, you know, 4-6 tanks, rebreather, gases, trimix, and all this stuff. To be fair, some of the most beautiful dives I've ever done were actually just along a particular reef that we have here in Malta. Mm-hmm. And it's not a reef that many people go to be fair. It's on the off-beaten track. So, you know, it does involve a little bit of an expedition, so to speak. Exploring the coast, particularly the southern coast of Malta, I've been discovering some very, very interesting sea caverns and particular, formations underwater, which are not known with by the public, case in point by divers. Why? Because many divers just simply go to dive sites that everybody does, so to speak. So I am Trimix certified, which means I can go down to 60, 65 meters with my level of experience. But it goes to show, guys, listen, you can still have a very, very good dive within recreational limits, even just opening up a map and seeing where possibly an area might be very well worth experiencing. And yes, some of the photos I've been sharing, for example, since last summer, of these very fascinating sea caverns. So basically I just go in, literally just even just 5 meters in inside this big cavern, and you turn around so you can see the exit, you know, and you see these very nice entrance and formations, and with the azure blue that we have, almost blinding blue, you can get some really, really nice photos of the entrance of the cave, so to speak.
I have a quick question. How do you get to these dive sites in Malta? Like, is it easy to get to from shore? Like, is it easy to get public access to places, or do you take a boat?
Typically, normally, almost all dive sites, particularly on the coast, you can access from shore. Obviously, the deep stuff that we have, the airplanes, the battleships, the submarines, so on and so forth, you do need a boat, because normally they are anywhere between 2 kilometers to all the way up to 15 to 18 kilometers away. So obviously the 18 or 15 ones is a pretty long boat dive, so to speak. But the majority of dive sites, both on Malta and even on Gozo, yes, you can access from land. So, for example, typically, I'm sure you guys must have heard of the Caruela, which is the very famous shipwreck in Gozo with the iconic stairs where you see many divers taking their Instagram shots. That, for example, is the deck starts at around 35, 37. and goes down on the sand to 42 meters, so right on the edge of recreation limits. Yes, you can access that from shore, literally just a 10-minute swim out, and yeah, you're dropping on the Caruela. The other big wreck that we have is the Umm El Farud, which is an oil tanker based in Zuri, which is in the southern part of Malta, mainland. That maximum depth is over there is 32, 35 meters. And yes, that, for example, is also accessible by land. So it depends on the dive site. But yes, the majority you can access by from land.
Very cool. And so now, like me, and you kind of alluded to this a bit earlier in the show, but you're a person that was lucky enough to have a close relationship with your grandfather. And that, along with him being a veteran, has influenced your diving and in particular, some of the exploration diving that you've been doing in the waters that surround Malta. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how these all intersect with your diving?
You know, I mean, when we're young, we always have a particular family member that we get so well with the person. In my case, it was my grandfather. And again, it all started with the stories he used to tell me. And my grandfather used to live in quite one of the busiest towns. We call it cities, but it's nowhere near like what you guys have up and up there. But we call them towns, basically. And yes, one of the busiest towns that we have on the island is Sliema. And my grandfather used to live there during his time. And yes, Sliema, which is very close to our capital, Valletta, was one of the most places that used to get bombed nonstop during the war. And not only because he was a veteran in the war and he served with the army as a quartermaster, but also the story that he used to tell me, particularly of both the Royal Air Force planes, case in point, like the Boo Fighters, the Bremen Bombers, and also of Nazi planes that used to come and drop bombs on us. And you always used to mention the JUs. And when I was young, like, what is JUs, grandfather? What do you mean JUs? By the way, grandfather in Maltese, we used to say it Nannu. So I used to tell them, Nannu, what do you mean with JUs? And obviously, as I grew up, and I got to know that, yes, we do have JUs, JU-88, which is a medium-sized Nazi bomber, as a wreck that I can visit. It was always a goal for me to one day reach. And luckily, since I recently finished my TriMix training, along with some of my mates, we went down on a JU-88. There's also a photo on my social media that I shared of a tail section of the JU-88 encrusted with coral nowadays. So it's been lying there for well over 65, 70 years. It's lying slightly to the side. And that dive for me, literally, I felt like it's the closest thing to time travel. You know, knowing that, okay, we know that Malta was heavily bombed, blah, blah, but actually seeing something dating to all the way back and with the significant historical connection I have with my grandfather, it was a mesmerizing dive. It was absolutely amazing.
Are there any wrecks that you're looking for? Is there anything you're out there searching for, especially, you know, connected to World War II?
Well, it's literally like a shopping list here in Malta. So you can, if you're qualified and you have the equipment for it, you can easily wake up and say, you know what, I want to do a submarine today. And guess what? We have three submarines here in Malta. Very quickly, we have HMS Stubborn, 55 meters. Recently, they discovered a British submarine, HMS Urge. Bit of a story behind the Urge. So it gave a lot of closure to some family members in the UK. Or for finding actually this wreck. It's not yet available to the public. It's around 92 meters. And then we have HMS Olympus, which is, again, a British submarine that's quite deep. It starts at around 95, 98, and plummets to 125 meters. That's a very, very deep dive. But the beauty, for example, of HMS Olympus is that it's laden with black coral. And it's very rare that you find, with our waters here in Malta, to find an area with black coral on it. But anyway, moving on from that, you know, we then have battleships. For example, we have HMS Southwold, which was a destroyer during the war that hit a mine and split into two. And one side, the bow is listed to the starboard side, and the stern, the rear, is about 200 meters away from the bow, and it's sitting upright, and you're seeing the guns of the ship still pointing towards the surface, and you know, with some nice video lights, you can light them up. It's we literally have the mix and match of almost everything. We also have a couple of planes that were ditched during the war, both British and also Nazi. Case in point, we have another Ju-88, which was perfectly ditched into the sea. Luckily, it did not flip over, and it's at around 105 meters, and it's perfectly intact. The fuselage is still there. The planes, the props are still there. The wings are also there, even the tail section. So it was a controlled ditch. So yeah, we have the whole lot here on the island. So yes, I encourage everyone that has the right training and knowledge and experience, that if you never visited Malta, guys, make sure it's on your list, because trust me, we have a lot to offer for everyone.
That's, I mean, you really paint a really diverse picture of diving in Malta, which kind of leads me to my next question, because you started Diverse Scuba Solutions, and given how well developed the dive industry is in Malta, what motivated you to kind of go down that road?
As I explained earlier, Nick, so my passion for teaching was instilled when I was as a volunteer firefighter and later on as a fire instructor. So I really like reaching out and connecting with people. And I see that actually it all has to do with networking. And the beauty of being an instructor, whether it's a first aid instructor, as a fire instructor, or even as a scuba diving instructor nowadays, I'm blessed to meet with people from different walks of life, whether it's, they all come from different industries, so to speak. And yeah, I mean, when I'm teaching a course or when I'm teaching a workshop through the dive center that I am affiliated with here on the island, you build up a connection with the student. And it's not just about delivering a service, but the goal is actually getting to know the person. And not every course or workshop is taught the same way. People all have their areas which they are very proficient in, and some areas that they need working on, so to speak. And it's all down to the instructor to identify the areas that need to polishing up, and also adjusting the course and the tempo of the workshop so that the knowledge is delivered, but not in a too aggressive way, so to speak. And the goal behind Diverse Scuba Solution is literally to unlock the full potential of my clients and my students that come to me, whether it's working on the back kick, working on some side mount skills, working on some theoretical knowledge or to dive planning, so on and so forth. And it's literally just about finding the right tempo and the niche and expanding on that and making people believe that, yes, with the right knowledge and the resources, dreams can come and can become a reality.
Well, that's awesome. Makes me want to come take some courses from you. we'll think about planning that trip while we take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more from Demis Farrugia.
You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or at podchaser.com. Reviews are one of the best ways to help others find the podcast.
This episode of Dive In the Podcast is brought to you by Torpedo Rays Scuba.
You can find them online at torpedorays.com.
They've been teaching Canada how to dive for 25 years and are a proud sponsor of this podcast.
If you're in Atlantic Canada and want to take a course or see the shop, stop in and see us in Dartmouth and check out the huge selection of scuba, apnea, surf gear, and much more.
Dive tours are available for locals and visitors to experience all that our ocean playground has to offer.
TorpedoRays.com has a vast selection of dive gear at unbeatable prices, with free shipping available in Canada and quick shipping throughout North America.
So visit TorpedoRays.com or stop in the shop, and you might even see one of us there.
Welcome back to Dive In the Podcast. We're speaking with Demis Farrugia, who is the owner of Diverse Scuba Solutions in Malta. He is a recreational and technical instructor and a passionate sidemount diver. So before the break, we were speaking a little bit about Diverse Scuba Solutions, and you were telling us a little bit about it and how you got into it. What is your philosophy when it comes to teaching? Like, what's important to you in terms of teaching, and how do you set yourself apart from other instructors in that regard?
The goal behind the Diverse Scuba Solutions, and the reason why I embarked on the journey to starting Diverse Scuba Solution back in 2018, was to offer tailor-made courses and workshops for students. And for me, it's like personal coaching. It's typically when people go, for example, to the gym or to fitness classes, where normally they would hire a coach to obviously coach them for in regards to the exercise that they want to do. My classes, whether it's a course or actual workshop, it's all about keeping the numbers low so that I can truly focus on what the student actually needs. And prior to even starting the course and setting down the foundation of how the course will be run, normally I always have a chat or a meeting with students and see actually what they are after. It's not about selling a course. It's about progressing towards the goal of the student. Because, you know, a course, sure, it shows that at a point in time, a certification card simply shows that at a given time, that student has met the minimum requirements that is being advocated by the training agency. But is it really actually what the student actually wants? I mean, typically, for example, I have people that come to me and say, hey, you know, I want to become a scuba diver. And the first question I ask them, all right, guys, sure, okay, you want to become a scuba diver. So, you know, what's interest you in scuba diving, for example? And some people tell me, yeah, I need it for an upcoming thesis that I have next year. You know, I need to do something related to the marine. And I've been blessed enough to teach some students that actually pursue the career in biology and marine conservation. I also had people that come to me, for example, hey, you know, I'm an open water and advanced open water diver. You know, I want to start my technical diving journey, you know, and that's where the discussion starts. Sure, you want to go down the twin set route, you want to go down the side mount route. And for example, here in Malta, side mount only over the past years has it been picking up. I wouldn't say slowly picking up, to be fair. I mean, I am one of the most enthusiastic and, you know, passionate side mount divers and instructors here on the island that pushing side mount. I do believe that side mount has a lot to offer. It's not just of the flexibility and, you know, and the benefits it gives in terms of redundancy, but also the benefits it gives, for example, in relation to not everyone can lift a twin set. I'm not saying that side mount should be for people that can't lift up a twin set. But if you have somebody that's small, you know, their frame is super small, and they want to progress onto as a technical diver, why do we need to tell them, listen, unless you can't lift a twin set, you can't become a technical diver? So I believe that it has a lot and a lot to offer, so to speak. Yes, whilst I do teach back mount quite frequently on the island, but my main specialty over the past, I'd say, year or so has been definitely side mount and, you know, showing the true benefits of what it has to offer.
That sounds very cool. And so I guess there's another aspect, though, that I have noticed in some of the work that you have done. One of these that comes to mind to me was there was a recently released regulator review that was perhaps, you know, I'm not naming names on purpose, but it was rather one of the most comprehensive reviews of a new regulator I've seen in a while. And so my question is, it's kind of twofold. Why go to that much trouble and effort to review a piece of scuba gear? And my second question is, do you see this as also part of the, you know, part of the service that you maybe provide to people through Diverse Scuba Solutions?
So yes, Amit, it's interesting you mentioned that. Yeah, trust me, that regulator review that I did for XDeep, I was one of the lucky ones that was chosen by XDeep. Last year during COVID, when we were all in lockdown, back in March, I got this small little package. You know, actually got two packages, to be fair. I got one package with my sealed dry suit, which is a review I'm currently working on and hope to launch by end of the year. And also got a small package, which was this XDeep regulator review, which I know, you know, I was following very closely its development. And yeah, it landed on my porch during COVID. And yeah, now it's been more than a year and a half me using the regulator. And yeah, I tend to agree with you that the what it had to be a short review ended up to be a full blown, fully fledged review with all the photos I enclosed and showcased to the world, I guess, of what potential this regulator has to offer. To be fair, I wanted to give something to the public that they haven't seen, so to speak. So I could have easily done a, you know, your typical 5-7 minute YouTube video, so to speak. But I also know that photos and detail for those that are interested will definitely be of interest, so to speak. And since Diverse Cuba Solutions is always about precision and accuracy, I said, let me stick to my roots and actually do something that has not been done yet. And I literally went for broke. So, you know, I set up the regulator, you know, it was being promoted and it's still being promoted as a reg that does all. So I said, all right, let's walk the talk. Let's put it in different configurations. So I put it in single tank back mount, in side mount, twin set, CCR bailout, so on and so forth. And as I was doing this, even I was mesmerized of how many potential configuration options that this regulator has. Typically, without mentioning any other brands, you know, normally with barrel style first stages, it's always a bit of a compromise. Sure, you'll make it work for side mount, but if you're using for CCR bailout, depending on what hose routing you're running, the hose will never be neat and available, so on and so forth. And I think with the way they've split the ports on the first stage, for example, it's very clever from their side. And also knowing that the performance it offers in terms of weight and also the breathing capabilities it has, I genuinely think it's a regulator to watch out for in the coming months, guys, as hopefully supply of the regs becomes more available. It's definitely a reg well worth waiting for, guys, particularly in North America and Canada. I know supplies have been quite limited given the COVID situation, but yes, we have regulators slowly trickling in into the market here in Europe. All I can say is that it's definitely well worth the wait.
It sounds like there's another regulator that I need to add to my collection. I'm gonna get Amit to share the link for that review, and we'll include it in the show notes because it certainly sounds something that people should read. And I kind of wanted to kind of maybe take another tack back to side mount. And as you mentioned earlier, you take boats as one way to go diving in Malta. And I know we've had this discussion here with Amit before, but boat operators are not always amenable or friendly to side mount divers. Do you find that the case in Malta? Is there issues with side mount divers going on dive boats?
Yes, since side mount only over the past 2-3 years of local divers has it been picking up. It's quite funny, in fact, and that was a niche that I really targeted, so to speak, over the past years, is that we have many people coming to learn side mount, but mainly they're tourists. And the local population here, I mean both expats and native Maltese, they're always interested in side mount. They always look at your equipment. They look at your wing. They look of how you don these tanks. You remove the tanks, so on and so forth. But it's like an occult, I guess. You know, they don't want to ask any questions. So only the very limited people will come, and you know, they will be like, you know, hushing, like, hey, listen, can I ask you a question? You know, why do you need to speak? You know, so low, guys. Come on, it's you know, let's have a chat on side mount. You know. Going back to your question, yes, given that there's not much awareness, luckily it's picking up nowadays about side mount, generally some boat operators will give you that awkward look sometimes. To be fair, the majority are quite understanding, and what they would expect, as with the back mount divers, is that, listen, if you're coming on my boat in side mount, please make sure that you can actually take care of yourself. You don't need, you know, chauffeuring or babysitting to don your tanks, etc., which is understandable. The guy isn't there to do heavy lifting, etc. He's there to deliver service, to get me to a dive site safely and on the wreck. I don't want to go down a shot line and I just find sand or a rock waiting for me. I expect to see a plane or a battleship waiting for me. So obviously, I mean, you have to be realistic. You can't expect the guys to be handing you the cylinders one by one. You have to walk the talk, you know. If you're a side mount qualified, yes, you have to be proficient and comfortable in the configuration, so to speak. And it all boils down, to be fair, in choosing your instructor. again, sometimes I see not only locally here, but it's unfortunately it's sad to see Sidemount being taught, for example, kneeling. I personally believe that Sidemount is one of the very few, you know, courses that shouldn't be taught kneeling, so to speak, because of the inherent benefits you get from the better weight distribution you have. Because the tanks, you can move them up and down, different bungee tensions, different tank options, fins, etc., etc. So, you know, I mean, a properly trained sidemount diver does not need any assistance to get in or out of the water unless it's a very big emergency.
Yeah, it's. I think I couldn't agree with you more in relation to that, having seen, I guess we'll call it the good, the bad, the ugly, and also the very good when it comes to getting in and out of the water in sidemount. And I'm not too sure where I fit in there, but yeah, I agree that you have to constantly work on that because we've got to break that stigma and get us welcomed onto boats. I did want to check on something else, though. In terms of your technical diving, you have primarily focused on trimix diving, but I understand that recently you've made the decision to take up rebreather diving. Why is that?
Yes, so I'm in the last final stages of choosing my unit that I'll be training with in the coming months. Next year, the goal is to go on the loop. And yeah, I mean, the interest on CCR actually started quite a long time ago. So I did a rebreather tri dive back when I was literally just 2 years into diving, so to speak. And what captivated me was purely, for those that have never dived on a CCR, it's the closest thing to taking a snorkel underwater. The sound is almost exactly the same. Not that you would need a snorkel with a CCR, mind you, but you know, the sound and the peace that you get is mesmerizing, literally. Even the marine life, you know, they come closer to you. Why? Because you're not emitting any bubbles or sound or whatever. You know, but in my case, it fits my philosophy is because I'm a gear geek. I have this vested interest in anything. I want to see how a regulator works, why that regulator is different to that, the fin data, that fin flows, that one sinks, so on and so forth. So yeah, I mean, CCR diving for sure fits my bill, particularly given the inherent benefit later on once I get the experience. That as you go down the route, the precision element that I have, I can use it to explore these deep dive sites that we have and extend my bottom time to a certain degree, whereby, you know, I can enjoy some of the wrecks a bit more. And also the off-gassing profile on CCR is definitely much better than on open circuit. Why? Because of constant partial pressure. So even from an off-gassing aspect, it has its benefits, so to speak.
Mm. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of cost and barrier to entry, you consider that a good thing?
The barrier to entry is a good thing, even though it might sound a bit strange. It's because I tend to sometimes see that, yeah, you know, CCR, it's okay, cool, it's fun, it's nice, but if you're not precise in what you're doing on CCR, the margin of error is significantly smaller than when compared to open circuit diving. And as we all know, we all share the same love for the sport. Diving doesn't hand out participation certificates. You either come out of a dive well, or you're going to end up in very, very, very bad situations when you're diving. And typically, sometimes, you know, the majority of the market, where it's going, yes, it's prudent that, particularly as instructors, that we act as gatekeepers. I am not a CCR instructor for now, but yes, there's no rush, you know. Let's take our time, do the research, check out the stuff, make sure it's what you actually want as well. Because sometimes I see people doing something with regards to diving, not only CCR, but they're doing it because their peers are doing it. But is it really what you want to be doing, so to speak? And yes, the barrier to entry sometimes does indeed save lives, so to speak. Mm-hmm. In my case, I've been conducting my CCR research of not only of what is a rebreather, but also, okay, you have this unit, the other unit, that unit, so to speak, and different configurations. And then you have MCCRs, ECCRs, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, my journey and research for side mount, sorry, for my journey and research for CCR has been going for at least 4 years. But nowadays, yeah, I'm comfortable. I can easily hold a conversation with other rebreather divers, even though I don't have one. But, you know, what do you like of that unit, or what do, or what you dislike of that unit, so on and so forth. And yeah, I mean, it's good to know what you're actually going to invest your money in, so to speak, prior to obviously initiating the capital costs, so to speak.
So what are you investing your money in?
Yes, I like to say what I invest. it keeps my bank account happy.
Yeah, and it's certainly, you know, nothing to take lightly when it comes to CCR. I mean, it does open a whole new world out there, but it does come with a price, not just financially, but also the attitude and the approach you take to it. And so with so many different rebreathers out there, so many options to choose from, how did you decide, and what unit did you decide on? Have you decided on one, and why that one?
Currently, I'm on the fence. The research has been quite extensive. Keeping in mind that I am a side mount, I'm a side mount diver. I wanted something that I can use both in back mount and in side mount. And currently, there aren't many that can cut and do both quite well. So I've been looking very closely towards the Divesoft Liberty. I've been speaking a lot with Joe Boskins, the representative for Divesoft in America, and also Jakub Slama, the main representative of Divesoft in Europe. And yeah, I mean, their support and, you know, showcasing some of the stuff currently only via calls at the moment, but I do hope to visit Divesoft in the, you know, in the not so near future. Sorry, in the not so distant future, sorry. And yeah, I mean, I would like to have a look closer at the unit, so to speak. I did already a couple of try dives on the unit, and I actually liked what potential it offers, so to speak, particularly with the heavy version that they just launched, so to speak. But even in terms of side mount, it's nice to have a unit that I can effectively do both, so to speak. So certain dives I can go in side mount, and later on, once I build up experience, you know, I can interchange between back mount and side mount quite easily, so to speak. And I know there are other units such as the KISS Sidewinder, which is also of interest to me, so to speak, predominantly for the very small compactness of the unit. I know a couple of guys like Mikko Pasi has been using it, Patrick Woodman as well, so to speak, and it's being quite pushed, particularly in Europe currently. I see a lot of more KISS Sidewind divers picking up. To be fair, I think currently the two brands to look out for, I think, are KISS, which nowadays is owned by XDeep as well, and I know they have a joint collaboration together, and also Divesoft. I think both are pioneers in terms of rebreather technology and configuration options that they offer. And it's interesting to see how much the market has picked up over the years. And yeah, I can only think that the market will continue to grow in the coming years.
Interesting. Lots of options out there, that's for sure. I have a question, though. I want to know if there's a diver or someone in the ocean community that inspires you.
Good question. I didn't see that coming. All right. Yes, I mean, very quickly, two people that come to mind. Starting with the first one, I only have limited knowledge for now on overhead diving. I only finished my cavern course a few years ago, and I had started my intro to cave training. But for sure, overhead diving is something of interest to me as well. So Brian K. Cook, I mean, I never been to the Bahamas specifically for diving, but some of the stuff that I've seen in terms of the caves and the photos that he showcases occasionally on social media are just out of this world. I know Mexico is very known for its cenotes, and there's also Sardinia in Europe, and I also know Russia. You know, they have Orda Cave, which is the largest gypsum natural storage area in terms of overhead cold water diving, so to speak. But yes, going back to Brian, I think the work he's doing there and what he's showcasing with these amber shapes with fossilized flies and all this stuff, and, you know, putting a video light right next to it and seeing this amber glow coming up, it's I don't know, it's mesmerizing to see, so to speak. The next person I think that inspires me in terms of what has been what has been showcased in some of the work that he's been doing, I think it isn't typically a person per se. I think it's actually a team, to be fair. And I think locally here, the UCHU, the Underwater Cultural Heritage Unit, which is a division within Heritage Malta. There's a website which I encourage the audience to follow and to look. It's called Virtual Museum Underwater Malta, whereby you see our historical wrecks being showcased with some of the photogrammetry that they've been doing, the divers. And a lot of resource and effort has been put not only to showcase these wrecks and being made available to the public that they can see closely, but also the conservation aspect that goes with the project per se and the research behind it. For example, prior to a wreck being made available to the public, a lot of research goes in terms of its significance in terms of historical importance and also the excavation that goes in. Case in point, for example, the B-24 Liberator wreck that we have on the archipelago, which is a World War II bomber, an American bomber. It was deemed a war grave because one of the crew on the plane perished inside the plane. And prior to releasing the coordinates for the wreck, apart from picking up some of the artifacts, maybe some oxygen bottles and gun emplacements on the wreck, but also they managed to excavate some of the remains of the pilot which survived all this time underwater. And, whilst I'm blessed to be on the archipelago, let's not forget that these ultimately, whether they are Axis or allies, these are ultimately war graves. So yes, to answer your question, Justin, the project work that the UCHU team, all the team behind UCHU that they've been doing, it's a big inspiration for me because, the videos, photos that they showcase is just amazing.
Wow, that sounds really amazing, and I know of Brian's work, and it's definitely beautiful. And what you speak of in Malta sounds wonderful as well. If somebody listening here is wanting to head over to Malta and make contact with you, where can they find you on social media or otherwise?
Okay, so they can find me on social media, both Facebook and Instagram. So on Facebook, it's Diverse Scuba Solutions. It's the full name. And on Instagram, I am diverse_scuba. And I also have a website. I hope to be launching a rebranded version of the website in the coming months. I've been working on it, so to speak, to give it more of an uplift. But yeah, if anyone is interested to come over to the island for some training and also for some guided diving, feel free to reach out to me. Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Demi. What keeps you diving?
What keeps me diving? Okay, so that's an interesting one. From an instructor aspect, it's I see it as a lifelong journey whereby, given that I'm young and I'm in very good health, and I plan to keep it that way, it's about meeting up with people and making a difference to their lives in terms of their underwater performance as divers. And again, I'm lucky that I can teach on different configurations, both in back mount and in side mount. And yes, it's the passion that I have for diving and also the interest of seeing others progress towards, becoming a better diver from where they started when they undertake a course or a workshop with me. On a more personal note, what keeps me diving, the minute I go underwater, I leave all the problems and stress that we all encounter during our lives, at the surface. And yeah, I just go into my zone and truly it's therapy for me. And again, with reference to the historical history of the wrecks that we have here, it's the closest thing to time travel. I mean, we can all watch all the documentaries that we want or movies, etc., or reading. But when you're actually visiting a wreck, particularly, for example, me, the biggest love I have is actually for airplanes. I'm not saying that the battleships and the submarines don't interest me, but an airplane, it's only meant to be in the sky, not underwater, And for me to see a plane lying there, it's just mesmerizing,
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And I want to thank you, Denise, for coming on the podcast tonight and chatting with us, staying up late. I know it was late there in Malta, and it's getting late here. And it's just been a really great time chatting with you and sharing, having you share your passion and love for scuba diving, because it just comes across so naturally. It's been awesome.
Thank you guys for having me. It means a lot to me. It was nice meeting everybody. And yeah, you know, I look forward to chatting with you guys again.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
All right. Well, that was awesome. Thanks again to Demise for showing up and chatting with us. And actually, you brought Demise along for a special episode of DecoStop, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of these ones where it's very rare to have a chance to keep a guy on the show, because I always feel bad about intruding on people's time. But, you know, Demise was quite enthusiastic and quite well-versed in his technical diving. And one of the things that has always been a question for me was, how is the dive community receiving technical diving from the perspective of side mount? So this is one of those unique ones where, you know, I get to pull together my complete bias for side mount with my deep love of technical diving and ask a guy, so, hey, can you really be competent as a tech diver diving primarily in side mount? So why don't we go over and listen to what he had to say in relation to that. One of the things I wanted to ask you, just specific to DecoStop, which is, as you know, a segment that we do here in relation to, you know, to technical diving, was the idea of trimix diving as it pertains to doing it in the side mount configuration. A lot of people have some skepticisms as to whether or not true technical diving can be had in side mount. What are your thoughts?
It's a very interesting point, to be fair. And even on social media, I'm seeing many, many posts, both on the open circuit and on the closed circuit, of the viability of side mount in technical diving, typically for trimix diving. What I can say from my experience is that typically over the past few months, in fact, I've been doing quite a lot of trimix dives to 60 meters and 55 meters in trimix. Jumping off a boat, so to speak, with all my tanks attached, so on and so forth. Again, Amit, I think it all boils down to where people want to take their diving. As much as I've seen very good back mount divers, I also seen some very terrible side mount divers. So I don't want to make this a biased conversation in regards that, yeah, I mean, all right, you're in side mount, you love side mount. But yeah, I mean, I've seen some very, very good back mount divers, as much as I've seen, unfortunately, bad side mount divers. So I think it all boils down to two things. Firstly, the training that people undertake. And that's where it all boils down, choose your instructor very carefully. But also, again, it's not just about getting a certification. It's also following up with the knowledge as it progresses. And when I, you know, even myself as an instructor, I definitely have to stay abreast with the skills of getting in and out of the water. Because once you're in the water, to be fair, side mount, it all falls into place. And that's where some little tips and tricks come into play. For example, many people say that, oh yeah, you know, jumping on side mount in trimix configuration of a rib is the most complex and difficult way to actually get into the water. Little do people know that actually jumping off a rib is actually the easiest way to get into the water, where nowadays I literally just sit on the Hypalon tubes, take one tank up on the Hypalon, catch a bit my breath, clip it on, bungee on, connection of the hoses are all in, regs deployed, etc. Next tank on the Hypalon, let it bounce a bit, no problem, it's not going anywhere. Clip it on and keep on going. Then for the stages, what do? I like to be self-sufficient. And what I do is that I attach the clips, the top clips, the top bolt snaps of the stages to my crotch D-ring. Once the captain gives me the go-ahead, back roll in, and that's it. I'm all done. At least two of the tanks, half of the estate is all done, which means that I only need to attach my lean deco and my rich deco, typically would be 50% and 100% oxygen. Just clip them on, that's it. And off I go. Obviously, it goes without saying, the body check, again, in side mount, I would do it all prior to getting into the water, because the last thing I want when I have 1 meter or 1.5 meter swells is staying on the shot line with my buddy, getting the water smacked in my face, and I'm trying to do a body check. Anything that you guys can do on the boat, make sure you do it before you go jump off of the boat. So that way, Everyone is geared, prepped, all set. Stages are in the right location. In my case, for example, the 50 would go to the left-hand side, the oxygen to the right-hand side. Never skip that check. And down we go. And down we go, we go. For example, also another interesting point is that we're seeing many other back-mount CCR divers that are nowadays side-mounting their bailouts. And it goes without saying that side-mounting your bailouts, not only are you organizing your bailout tanks much better, but also you're being efficient with the space that you have available. And it's sad to see that sometimes, you know, side-mount is not advocated more because apart from the streamlining benefit you get, but having the tanks pinned down to your body as you're frog kicking, it stops these banging sounds that you hear. It's like church bells, ding 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 ding, as you're doing a frog kick. In side mount, assuming that the correct setup is being undertaken with the loop bungee and other stuff, it keeps everything in check and streamlined. And yes, you don't get that that banging sound that you normally hear. So yes, as time goes by, I won't be surprised that we start seeing more side-mount configurations, open circuit and closed circuit, being more popular on typical TriMix dives.
Well, that's fantastic. And yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to give us a quick breakdown on why side-mount can be beneficial for decompression diving. So thank you very much, Demise.
Nice to get another new perspective on our DecoStop this week, Amit.
Yeah, you know, I really got to thank Demise for that because, like I said, he's a passionate side mount diver and tech diver, and it was a piece that we'd spoken to before we'd actually gotten to the recording point, and a piece that I think he was passionate about. So glad that we were able to capture it for the episode.
Well, that does it for today's episode. I want to thank Demise for joining us. It was a pleasure again. It was super awesome. I really enjoyed having him on. And I thank him for staying up till, what did he say, 2 or 3 in the morning for interview. Yeah. So it was, he's hardcore. You know, he did it, he said, for the love of diving. So something we all know about. I want to thank Nick for being on this week. Thank you, Nick.
Says, absolute pleasure as always. It's great to hear from somebody from another part of the world yet again. And what I found really interesting that he talked about a lot of names that we don't really recognize as household names in this part of the world. So it kind of opens up of a new window for us to kind of explore the dive community further afield.
Head back to Malta in future episodes, I think. Yeah, and Amit, thank you.
I'm very happy to be here as always and talk to people as it were. And yeah, it was a great episode. A lot of passion coming through from Demise, and was very glad that he shared his time with us tonight.
Definitely, definitely. And don't forget, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/diveinpod and get some fun rewards for doing so. Visit our website, diveinpod.com, for all the links you need for episodes, merch, and so much more. On social media, you can follow me at iDiveOK. You can follow April at April Weichert.
I'm at Nicholas Winkler Photography.
Next week, we speak to Derek Smith, who is the president of the American Academy of Underwater Sciences.
This episode of Dive in the Podcast was brought to you by our sponsor, Torpedo Ray Scuba.
Thank you for listening.